Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Srila Prabhupada ki. After Nityananda Prabhu, the greatest branch is Virabhadra Gosai, who also has innumerable branches and sub-branches. It is not possible to describe them all. Purport. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur describes Virabhadra Gosai as the direct son of Srila Nityananda Prabhu and disciple of Janvadevi. His real mother was Vishuddha. In the Gauraganadesha Deepika, verse 67, he is mentioned as an incarnation of Shiradakshai Vishnu. Therefore, Virabhadra Gosai is non-different from Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In a village of the name Jamatpur, in the district of Hooghly, Virabhadra Gosai has a disciple named Yadunath Acharya, who had two daughters, a real daughter named Srimati and a foster daughter named Narayani. Both these daughters married, and they are mentioned in Bhakti Ratnakar, chapter 13. Virabhadra Gosai had three disciples who were celebrated as his sons, Gopijana Vallabh, Ramakrishna and Ramachandra. The youngest, Ramachandra, belonged to the Shandilya dynasty and had the surname Vatavoyal. He established his family at Kadadaha, and its members are known as the Goswamis of Kadadaha. The eldest disciple, Gopijana Vallabh, was a resident of a village known as Lata, near the Manakar railway station in the district of Burdwan. The second, Ramakrishna, lived near Maladaha, in a village named Gayeshpur. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur notes that since these three disciples belonged to a different gotra or dynasties and also had different surnames and lived in different places, it is not possible to accept them as real sons of Virabhadra Gosai. Ramachandra had four sons, of whom the eldest was Rama Madhav, whose third son was named Yadavendra. Yadavendra's son was Nandakishore. His son was Nidhi Krishna. His son was Chaitanya Chanda. His son was Krishna Mohan. His son was Jagan Mohan. His son was Vrajanath. And his son was Shyamalal Goswami. This is the genealogical table given by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur for the descendants of Virabhadra Gosai. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragunatham Vitam Tvam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakham Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Pancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vashadi Gaura Bhakta Brinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So I beg for the blessings of all the assembled Vaishnavas that I can speak something which is beneficial for everyone concerned. So the verse today is on Virabhadra Goswami. And it's someone, a personality who we don't hear very much about really. And actually, upon doing some research, whether it's the CC or Chaitanya Bhagavat, etc., there's not a great deal which is described about Virabhadra Goswami. There's a little information which is available, at least according to my research, there's some information available in Bhakti Ratnakar, which Prabhupada mentions here, about Virabhadra Goswami and his family lineage. In particular, it describes how Virabhadra Goswami was, of course, he was a son of Lord Nityananda, which I think most people know. And he had two wives. Actually, it's described that his guru was Janava Devi. So we won't get into the whole issue of women gurus, but of course, this is one of the points, which is a very valid point, as to why Vaishnavi should be able to give diksha, is that there is a precedent for it in our lineage. Actually, there are a number of female gurus in our heritage, and one of them, and the most prominent, is probably Janava Devi. So she was actually the guru of Virabhadra Goswami. And one day she walked into the house of Yadunathacharya. And he wasn't a devotee at the time, but she preached to him, and she preached to him so powerfully, so effectively, that he also became a devotee. And so did his family. So he had two daughters, and they were called Srimati and Narayani. So Janavadevi arranged for the marriage of these two daughters with her disciple, Virabhadra Goswami. And so these two daughters of Yadunathacharya, they became the wives of Virabhadra Goswami. And they in turn took initiation from Janavadevi. So she actually had many, many disciples. It's interesting, just going forward a little, I think Neela Mahaprabhu is giving class tomorrow, but I'm sure he'll forgive me. Text 11 describes something very interesting. Text 11 says, "It is by the glorious mercy of Sri Virabhadra Goswami that people all over the world now have the chance to chant the names of Chaitanya and Nityananda." So this is very interesting. It is by the glorious mercy of Sri Virabhadra Goswami that people all over the world now have the chance to chant the names of Chaitanya and Nityananda. So we can understand that Virabhadra Goswami is a very powerful personality, because Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, at least Srila Prabhupada, is saying that by his mercy, this Krishna consciousness movement has been spread all across the world. So the lineage from Nityananda Prabhu, from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Gaudiya Vaishnav Sampradaya, is being carried over by Srila Prabhupada. And he's the one who 50 years ago came to the West and spread this Krishna consciousness movement across the world. So this is the mood of Nityananda Prabhu. Actually, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left Bengal, when he took sannyas, he went to Jagannath Puri and stayed there for 18 years until he left the world. Well, he travelled around India for 6 years and then stayed in Jagannath Puri for 18 years. But when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left, he instructed Lord Nityananda to stay in Bengal and to preach. So this was the instruction for Lord Nityananda Prabhu. And so Nityananda Prabhu would go door to door and he'd knock on the door. Who's done door to door here? Door to door book distribution. Okay, so some of you. So Lord Nityananda, he would do door to door. He'd knock on the door, and as soon as they'd open the door, he would fall flat at their feet and say, "Please chant the holy names of the Lord. Please take shelter of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu." So this was his mood in preaching. He was begging and pleading people to take shelter of Lord Krishna, of Radha and Krishna. So when we're preaching, this also has to be our mood, that we are begging and pleading people to take shelter of the Lord. So of course, this is not something that we physically do. We don't physically, I think we'd probably get reported to the police if we started knocking on doors and falling flat at people's feet. But we have to internally be desperate for people to take shelter of the Lord. So it's described actually that Virabhadra Goswami was also very, very potent in preaching the cult of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. the cult of Krishna consciousness, because he took the mood from his father, from Lord Nityananda Prabhu. There's one pastime, which is in relation, of course, today's the disappearance day of Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, Raghunath Bhatt Goswami, and Raghunath Das Goswami. So once Lord Nityananda, there was a great devotee of Lord Nityananda, and his name was Miniketana Ram. This pastime is described in Adi Leela 5, the fifth chapter. So Miniketana Ram was a great devotee of Lord Nityananda. He was absorbed in ecstasies constantly. And he was also externally manifesting his spiritual form as a cowherd boy. So one day he walked into the home of Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, and he was staying there for some time. And many, many devotees came to see this great personality and take his association and take some guidance and some instruction in Krishna consciousness. So one of the people that came, actually not necessarily to take his association, but one of the individuals that was in that assembly was a priest called Gunarnava Mishra. And he was in a devotee of the Lord. And he actually, when he came, he didn't pay his respects to Miniketana Ram. Miniketana Ram was a great, great devotee of the Lord. And so naturally, everyone who comes should pay their obeisances, should offer some sweet words, some words of glorification for such a personality. But he didn't even recognize his, he didn't even pay any respects to Miniketana Ram. So Miniketana Ram saw this individual, and he wasn't affected by the fact that he wasn't offered respects. But he could see that in Gunarnava Mishra's heart, there was some offense. At that time, even in the times of in the presence of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and soon after his presence, there was some very, being the material world, there was some very odd ideas going around. So there were question marks over whether Lord Nityananda was actually a Vishnu, was actually Vishnu Tattva, or whether maybe he was Jiva Tattva. This was one of the ideas. There were question marks over Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself. Some people thought that he was a Gauranga Nagari, meaning he was acting as though he was Krishna with many, many girlfriends, as opposed to staying chaste to his wives. So there were many very contaminated philosophies and ideologies going around. So the Gauranga Nagaris are one of the upper sampradayas. There were 13 upper sampradayas which Bhaktivinoda Thakur looked to defeat. So there were many contaminated philosophies going around. So Gunarnava Mishra was affected by these philosophies. So he didn't necessarily understand Lord Nityananda to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And therefore he had this offensive mentality. And actually the brother of Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami also felt the same. He sided with this priest. And therefore when Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami saw this, he was very, very upset with his brother. And they had an argument. And so that night, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami was resting, and he had a dream. And Nityananda Prabhu came to him in his dream. Now, whenever there's Vaishnava Prad, we understand that there's three options. What are the three options? Does anyone know? Walk away. So leave that place. Number two, cut out the tongue. Cut out the tongue of that person. So this was probably going through Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami's mind. Should I cut the tongue of my brother? And the third? Suicide. So you either kill yourself, you cut out their tongue, or you leave that place. So you've got three options. Now in today's world, it's probably best to go with the third option. You probably don't want to commit suicide. That's not a good idea. This is also not in line with our philosophy. And if you cut out their tongue, then you'll probably have some problems with the police. So he left that place. Under the instruction of Nityananda Prabhu, actually that night Nityananda Prabhu came to Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami's dream, and he instructed him that leave now for Vrindavan. So directly Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami got up and he left for Vrindavan. And there he wrote Chaitanya Charitamrita and did many other great works, of course. So Nityananda Prabhu's mood is to preach Krishna consciousness. And this is something that we can do very well to take on into our lives, this mood of preaching. Of course, it's fundamental to our mission, to our movement. In one conversation between Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Haridas Thakur in Antya Leela 3, third chapter, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is very worried. He's very upset. And he has a burden on his shoulders, he describes. And that burden, he describes, is the yavanas and the malechas of the world. He's seeing that all these people are not chanting Hare Krishna. They don't even know about Krishna. And so he feels this great burden on his shoulders. He feels like he needs to help these people to become Krishna conscious. So Haridas Thakur, he says something very simple. He says, Prabhu, chintana kuriya. He says, Prabhu, O Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, do not worry. Do not worry because I will take on some of this responsibility onto my shoulders. So in the purport to this verse, Srila Prabhupada says that this is the duty of every member of the Krishna Consciousness Movement. Every member of the Krishna Consciousness Movement must take some of this burden from the shoulders of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and onto their own shoulders. So they must take on some of that burden. And in this way, we become very dear to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Imagine if you're carrying a heavy weight, a heavy load of boxes. At the moment, we're preparing for Dashera. So we're on the fields, some of us, preparing for the festival tomorrow. And sometimes we have to carry very heavy weights. And if someone comes to you and just takes a small portion of this weight, if you've been carrying it for a very long time and it's very heavy, then if someone just takes a small portion of this weight off of your shoulders, then it makes a big difference. It helps a lot. And you're very thankful to this person. Similarly, if we take some responsibility in the Krishna Consciousness Movement to try and preach Krishna Consciousness, then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is very pleased because some of that burden which is on his shoulders is taken off and is put onto our shoulders. And it may not necessarily be very comfortable for us to take on that responsibility. It's much easier to have a relatively simple life. But actually we can make much more advancement if we can do that. It was the summer of 1975. And in Los Angeles, the devotees in the BBT, that was the BBT headquarters at the time, it was world headquarters for the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust, they had just installed state-of-the-art printing machinery. So Ramesh Rupru was in charge, and he was very proud to invite Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada came especially to see this machinery. It was all the latest printing mechanisms available at the time. They'd spent a fortune on it all. And they were very happy to inform Srila Prabhupada that they would now be able to produce one book every 2 months. And in this way, they could really rank up the production of Srila Prabhupada's books. And they thought this would really please him. So Srila Prabhupada was interested to see this machinery. And of course, Prabhupada was writing and translating at the time at a very, very fast pace. He had finished the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and it was in raw manuscripts at the time. So he said, he thought a little when he looked at the devotees. Actually, there was one devotee called Ramesh Rupru and another called Radhavallabha, and they were in charge of the printing press at the time. And they were very dear to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, well, I finished the Chaitanya Charitamrita, so I would like you to finish these 15 volumes, as well as at the time they were on the fifth canto. So Prabhupada said, I've just finished the fifth canto, so I'd like you to finish 15 volumes of CC and the 2 volumes of the fifth canto in 2 months. 2 months. And they just looked at Prabhupada, just, are you serious? And they didn't understand, and Prabhupada was deadly serious. Prabhupada said, I want these 17 volumes to be completed in 2 months. Simple. End of story. And there was a whole group of devotees around, and they all heard. And everyone was just aghast. They were just shocked. How is this possible? How can this be? Is Prabhupada really serious? And Ramesh turned around to Prabhupada, and he said, Prabhupada, this is impossible. And we all know how Srila Prabhupada replied. He said, the word impossible is found only in a fool's dictionary. This was Prabhupada's response. Shishi Radha Gokulananda ki. Shishi Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki. Shishi Gornitai ki. So this word impossible is only to be found in a fool's dictionary. You can do it. So the devotees decided that rather than try to make excuses, rather than trying to find all of the reasons why they couldn't do it, they got together and they decided that we have to do it. So they took on that responsibility. And the devotees described that the moment they took on that responsibility and said, we will do this because a pure devotee has desired it, because Srila Prabhupada has requested it of us, we will do it. So they decided that we're going to do this. So they got together and they found that ideas were flowing, people coming to the mind, understanding of how they could do it, mechanisms, people coming forward to help, and everything began to come together. It was a 2-month marathon of all marathons. The devotees were just, you know, they'd find themselves, they'd wake up, I was reading about it, and they'd wake up in the mornings just kind of slumped over their desks, having had a few hours of sleep in between their translating and layout and proofing and so on and so forth. It was an extremely intense period. Probably the most intense time that most of the devotees had and probably would ever have in their lives. But in 2 months, they completed these 17 volumes. And Srila Prabhupada was so ecstatic, he was so happy with the devotees. And so he wrote a letter, and he said, everyone that has taken part in the production of these books is guaranteed to go back to Godhead. So this was Prabhupada's response. Because they had taken some of the burden from the shoulders of Srila Prabhupada, and because they had given themselves to that service, given everything to that service, they've come out of their comfort zone in order to take on that responsibility for the pleasure of Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada was so, so grateful to them. So grateful to them. So in Liverpool, we were in Liverpool in the winter marathon, the Prabhupada marathon, just last year. And we were having a great time in Liverpool. This was the 22nd of December. And it was Nikhil, Zimon and myself. Three of us were in the town. And we were having a great time. Books were flying out and it was evening time. It was around 10 to 8. I remember the time. And one of the devotees turned around to me and he said, I need another 12 books in order to hit 100. And I said, yeah, but we decided that we're leaving at 8:15. So you've got 25 minutes to do 12 books. And he just said, that's just not possible. I mean, 12 books in 25 minutes, I've probably never done that in my life. 12 books in 25 minutes? And I said, you sound like an atheist. Because the atheist mentality is that I cannot do this. I cannot do this means that it's just me in the picture. Krishna's irrelevant. But if we really rely on Krishna and Krishna's mercy, then anything can happen. Miracles can happen. Ultimately, if we rely on Krishna, then he can make anything and everything happen. So 25 minutes later, he hadn't hit 100. But he'd probably got much closer. And hopefully his faith in Krishna had really increased because he had some wonderful interactions and many more people took books than he had expected. I think he finished the day on 95. So it was a good result. But if we rely on the mercy of Krishna, then anything can happen. And when we really dedicate ourselves to the mission, then Krishna really gives his mercy. There was one in the annals of book distribution, this Maharaji, her name was Gauri Devi, she will always be one of the most prominent figures. So she was describing that she wanted to dedicate her life to the service of book distribution. So she said she was in her early 20s and she was telling the devotees that I want to do book distribution until I'm 65. And when I'm 65, I want to retire and I want to go to Vrindavan and hear and chant. This was her plan. This was her life's plan. So she was a very fired up book distributor and she was inspiring so many people in this service, men included. And unfortunately, at the age of 45, she was so ill that she had to go to Vrindavan in order to leave her body. And when she was in the airport leaving, all of the devotees came to see her off. She was in Los Angeles airport. And as she was in a wheelchair, and as she was leaving, she was going around stopping people in a wheelchair trying to give them books. And she was ready to leave her body. So this is dedication, dedication to the mission. So there's so many inspiring personalities. In the pastime of Ambarish Maharaj and Durvasa Muni, he's a Brahmana, and he doesn't actually understand what or who a Vaishnava is. So he, of course, I won't go through the whole story because we have limited time, but he basically offends Ambarish Maharaj. He says to Ambarish Maharaj that I want some food. So then he goes to do his Gayatri and to have a bath before his meal. And Ambarish Maharaj is fasting for Ekadashi. And he's ready to break his fast for Ekadashi. And of course, we know that there are particular times between which you can break your fast. And the time gap was coming to an end. So he thought, what shall I do? Shall I break my fast or shall I not break my fast? So he consulted the Brahmanas. And after consulting them, he decided, he understood that there's a Shashtika injunction that says, if you take a spoonful of water, this is like breaking your fast and like not breaking your fast at the same time. So under their guidance, he took just a spoonful of water. But Ambarish Maharaj is a very powerful person. Durvasa Muni is a very powerful personality. So he could understand that his host, Ambarish Maharaj, had taken something without his presence. The etiquette is that you serve your guest first. So Durvasa Muni stormed to the palace of Ambarish Maharaj and said to him, what are you doing? Is this how you serve your guest? I'm Durvasa Muni. These are my 10,000 disciples. How is it that you feel yourself so qualified, you sense-gratifying king? How is it that you feel that you can take something before me? So he took some hair from his head and he threw it to the floor, and a fiery demon emerged. And that demon began to go after Ambarish Maharaj. But Ambarish Maharaj was a pure devotee of the Lord. So Krishna explains, Gonteya pratijanihi name bhakta pranashiti, that the Lord always protects his devotees. So Lord Vishnu came to his rescue. He took his Sudarshan Chakra and he killed the fiery demon and chased after Durvasa Muni. Durvasa Muni went to Lord Brahma and asked for help. Lord Brahma said, I can't help you. Then he went to his worshipful Lord, Lord Shiva, and Lord Shiva said, I can't help you. This Sudarshan Chakra, I can't do anything about. So then he fell flat at the feet of Lord Vishnu and apologized to Lord Vishnu and said, I'm so sorry, please take your Sudarshan Chakra away. And so in the ninth canto, there's a wonderful discussion. Ninth canto, fourth chapter, there's a wonderful discussion between Ambarish Maharaj, between Durvasa Muni and Lord Vishnu. And in this conversation, Lord Vishnu sees that Durvasa Muni doesn't actually understand who is a Vaishnava and how special the Vaishnavas are, how special the devotees of the Lord are. So Lord Vishnu looks to educate Durvasa Muni, and he describes, Durvasa Muni asks him, why is it that this Ambarish is so dear to you? What's so special about him? He's a king. He's absorbed in sense gratification. He has so much opulence around him. What is so special about him? So Lord Vishnu describes that you have no idea. Because these devotees of the Lord who are in the material realm are so special. Because they're having to deal with so many adversities, so many difficulties, so many austerities. And still, they're remaining fixed in devotion to me. And Lord Vishnu, in this conversation, he cites the example of Prahlad Maharaj. He says, Prahlad Maharaj is my pure devotee. He's absorbed in remembering me, always. And he's undergoing so many adversities. He had his demoniac father who tried to kill him on so many occasions, tried to take him away from my worship. And then when he could receive a benediction from Lord Nrisingadev, Prahlad Maharaj says, I don't want anything. I don't want any material opulence. All I want is that I can remain your devotee birth after birth. And if you're feeling kind, please forgive my father and allow him to become a devotee as well. Ultimately, it's described in the Brihat Bhagavatamrita that Prahlad Maharaj decides to take the kingdom. He decides to take the kingdom of his father, Hiranyakashipu. This is the benediction from Lord Nrisingadev. And so it can be confusing. Why is it that Nrisingadev, that Prahlad Maharaj took the kingdom from Nrisingadev when he had said no, that he doesn't want anything on the material platform? And it's described, Sanatana Goswami describes, that the reason he took the kingdom is because that kingdom would give him great facility to preach the fallen conditioned souls. And therefore, Prahlad Maharaj takes this kingdom and utilizes it in order to preach Krishna consciousness to the world, and very effectively so. So Lord Vishnu, in this conversation between Durasa Muni and himself, describes Prahlad Maharaj and says that this personality, Prahlad Maharaj, is so dear to me because he is undergoing so many difficulties and so many austerities. And therefore, he's very, very dear to my heart. And therefore, I'll always protect him. And therefore, I'm protecting Amrish Maharaj because he is also undergoing so many difficulties and austerities living in the material world and remaining my devotee. So we can see that the Lord is very, very grateful. He appreciates our efforts. In particular, he appreciates our efforts in our sadhana. Our sadhana is very, very potent because it gives us a certain purity, which actually no one else has. Devotees of the Lord are gleaming, they're shining, they have a very powerful aura, and some people can pick up on these things. I was in Denver a few months ago, Denver, Colorado in America, and the devotees were telling me a story. They were saying that a few months before that, earlier on in this year, there was a tour of the devotees from Mayapur, and they've been raising funds for the temple of the Vedic Planetarium. And there was a tour around the US where they were taking the paduka, the shoes of Lord Nityananda, around the US and trying to raise funds for the temple. So this was headed up by Janani Masprabhu. And so there was a party of devotees around the Denver temple who were outside, and they were waiting for the devotees to arrive. So there was a huge kirtan going on. All of the devotees were jumping and dancing very ecstatically, as we do. And the Denver temple is on the corner of a road. So one road is very quiet, but the other road is a one-way road, which is very busy. And there's many, many cars going up and going down the road very, very regularly. And one lady, she wrote in that evening, and she said, "Today, I was going down the road, and I stopped by, and I pass your temple every day on my way home from work. But today was different. Somehow the traffic light stopped me. So I stopped outside the temple and I just saw all of you devotees and you're all jumping and dancing so ecstatically and it was so powerful. And something was happening in my heart and I just felt like crying," she said in her email. And she said, "And then one of the monks, he was wearing orange robes. He just smiled at me and he waved. And she said, when he smiled at me, I was just, this ecstasy just took over my heart. My heart was jumping and dancing. And I just felt like getting out of the car and joining you all." And she said that it was just an amazing experience. And she said, "Please tell me how I can learn more about what you do, what you guys are all about, and how maybe I can help out. How can I learn more? And when can I visit your temple and actually have a look around?" So this was her email. And we were reflecting that the purity of the devotees is very, very special. When we're living with devotees, we don't actually see or realize how special the devotees are. We almost get used to the fact that, okay, devotees are chanting Hare Krishna, they're reading Srila Prabhupada's books, they're practicing various austerities in their lives. They're just ordinary, like the rest of us. But actually, people see and they feel this purity. They feel this something very special. And this is how empowerment comes, through sadhana. It's described that when the gopis, when they become bereft of Krishna, when Krishna leaves them, then they begin to enact Krishna's pastimes. So in Divine Madness, Divyomad, they begin to enact his various pastimes. So sometimes it's killing a demon, sometimes it's his pastimes with his parents, sometimes with his friends, and sometimes with the gopis. And one pastime that they love to enact is a pastime of Krishna lifting Govardhan Hill, the small finger on his left hand. And when they're enacting this pastime, Vishnu Acharya Thakur, he describes in the commentary that while they're enacting this pastime, they're so absorbed in thoughts of Krishna that they actually gain the power to actually lift up Govardhan Hill itself, themselves as well. So this is how empowerment works. Because they bring Krishna into their hearts in such a deep way, they gain the power, the potency of Krishna. So similarly, if we're meditating on Krishna, then we also become very attractive, not because of ourselves, but because of Krishna. And so we become very attractive to the conditioned souls, to people out there. So the more that we can bring Krishna into our hearts in a real and genuine way, the more we become very attractive to the people. And then preaching becomes easy because we have, to some degree, the potency of Krishna. And through our sadhana, it's said in the first canto, second chapter, seventh verse, it says, Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojitaha Janayati Ashu Vairagyam Jnanam Chayad Ahetukam. That practicing devotional service brings causeless knowledge and detachment. It's very potent, it's very powerful. So if we can be very detached in our preaching, people also feel that. When we're attached, people also feel it. They may not realize it. Often it's a subconscious understanding. But they can see that this person wants something from me. Because if we're attached, then it is for me. Because if you're attached to giving a book and taking a donation, then it's all about me. It's all about me giving them the book and me taking a donation and me reporting the score at the end of the day and everyone saying Jai. So this is something that we have to try and get rid of. We have to become detached. Detached from the result. Because when we're stopping someone on the street, there's two main things that they're worried that we'll take. Number one is their time. And number two is the money. So they're full of fear. They're full of fear. So somehow we have to make them feel peaceful and make them feel calm. And tell them that I'm not after anything. I don't want anything from you. So that only really comes if genuinely you don't want something from them. You can tell them, but they won't really believe you unless you really feel it. Because people pick up on these subtle aspects. So we have to be detached. And this comes from good quality sadhana. Just on Thursday, I went to Carnaby Street in London. And I was distributing books. And I stopped a couple. And they said that they were newlyweds. They just got married. But they were looking at me funny. They looked very friendly to begin with. And they were smiling, and they stopped very easily. And then they said those dreaded words, we're born again Christians. And we're not interested in your books, and we're not interested in giving you a donation, because we give to the church regularly, and you're just going to burn in hellfire. Very nice. But in my heart, I was not affected on this occasion. It didn't bother me. I actually just felt detached. No problem. And in my heart, I felt no negativity towards them. And I just said, thank you so much for stopping. I apologize for having taken so much of your time. It's wonderful to see you both. And I wish you the best for your life together. And I really wish them that from the heart, in a genuine way. And they left. And then they came back about half an hour later. And they were just looking at me. They were watching me for a few minutes. And I sensed them watching me and I saw them watching. And then they came to me. And when I'd finished with the person, and they said, we changed our minds. And they gave me £5. And they said that we were just impressed by how you responded to us. You know, we responded to you with such words of negativity, and you said to us, you know, your response to us was so positive, so nice, so pleasant. You know, whoever you are, whatever you're doing, you've got something. And I thanked them very much, and I said to them that actually it's a monk principle that I don't take anything without giving anything back. So I'd like to give you this book. And I gave them a Bhagavad Gita. And they actually accepted it. And I have faith that they're not going to burn it. So it was just a wonderful interaction, and it's not me. I understood and I know that it wasn't me, but it's the process of Krishna consciousness. If we practice devotional service properly, and on that morning maybe I chanted a few good mantras, but if we practice devotional service properly with our hearts, then this process works. It brings causeless knowledge, knowledge to understand that actually I'm here to give people something. On Sanktan, on book distribution, like on Harinam, many devotees love Harinam. Because on Harinam, you're not there to take anything from anyone. You're just jumping and dancing on the streets. It's easy. But book distribution becomes more difficult because you're there to take something from them. You're there to take their money, and you know that. And you know that that's a very uncomfortable experience for them, and therefore we're very mentally uncomfortable and uncomfortable about it as well. But we have to transcend that. And we have to understand that actually I'm here to give. I'm here simply to give people mercy. So when you're taking Lakshmi, ultimately that Lakshmi belongs to Krishna. It doesn't belong to any of them. They're going to use it for themselves in their own sense of gratification. So if you take a bit of that Lakshmi and use it in the service of Sri Sri Radha Gokulananda, that is the best Lakshmi they'll ever part with. So we are serving them by taking some of their Lakshmi and using it in pure devotional service. So we are giving them this opportunity. It's the best £5 that couple will probably ever spend. Yeah. So we're giving them this opportunity. Second thing is that we're giving them transcendental knowledge. Knowledge by which they can extricate themselves, remove themselves from this whole material realm. So we're simply giving people something. So if you were going around with £50 notes and giving people £50 notes on the streets, people would take the notes, probably, you'd hope, you'd think. And if someone said no, I don't want your £50 note, what would you think? Would you be affected? Would you feel upset? Would you mull over it? Would you say, I want to leave the street now? No. Because you're giving them something. You're very conscious that I'm here giving people something, and therefore you're totally unaffected because they've just rejected something which you're giving to them. You're giving them such a wonderful gift. But here we're giving them transcendental knowledge. So if they reject it, that's up to them. It's not something that we should or we need to get upset about, because ultimately we're there to give. And when we're really convinced in what we're doing and why we're doing it, we're there to give people the mercy. We're just messengers. We're conduits by which they can get the mercy. If we're there and really in that mood, then we're convinced. And when we're convinced, we have a certain... our vani, our words carry a certain potency, a certain assertiveness, assuredness, which also affects people. If you go up to a person and you say, "Hi there, I'm a monk and I'm kind of thinking about giving you this book and it's very interesting," you're not going to convince anyone because you're not convinced yourself. The most effective salespeople, the most effective politicians, the most effective people in this world are those who are really convinced about their products. There's one man called Ziggy Ziglar. Very funny name. Ziggy Ziglar. Has anyone heard of Ziggy Ziglar? He did these videos talking about selling, the science of selling. And he was giving a series of steps as to how to sell something. And the first point that he made in this video was that you have to be convinced about your product. Whatever you're selling, whatever you're trying to give anyone, you have to be convinced about it. If you're not convinced, then how are you going to ever convince anyone else? So we have to be very convinced. And in that way, our vani and our whole countenance, our whole mood has a certain potency and a certain ability to convince others. I'm going to stop there and see if there's any questions or comments.